So, ladies and gentlemen, we are broadcasting, as usual, as almost inevitable, from Southern California. And we've been rocked this week. Just rocked. If there was a Richter scale for non-seismic events, I would say a 6.5, maybe a 7. Kent Shocknick would be under his desk right now, still. Except they fired him, so he doesn't have a desk. But anyway, he was. I'll explain it to the people around the country. He was the guy who dove under his desk on the air when there was an earthquake in Los Angeles. Thank you. Now, to the rest of the broadcast. Rocked, I say, non-seismically, by the news that our favorite, that is to say our only, Metropolitan Daily Dog Trainer, has announced it will be doubling its price from a quarter to 50 cents, effective, I don't know, when they want to. Soon. Doubling. When's the last time you heard of anything doubling in price? Now, I mean, the news media like to wax critical of the allegedly greedy practices of other industries. You know, electricity went up. I believe the dog trainer was hot in pursuit of that story. Well, correction. I believe the dog trainer printed that story eventually. And, you know, may have even given birth to an editorial or two denouncing the precipitous rise in the price of electricity. I don't think electricity has doubled yet here in California. By the way, the lights are on. Thank you. Thank you for asking. Who else? Who else has been really greedy? Well, natural gas prices have gone up. They've spiked. Have they doubled? Maybe. I don't know. But usually, you know, things go up, I don't know, 10%. If it's bad, 20, 30% in times of rampant inflation. Very rarely do things just overnight double in price. You see what I'm saying? Now, we come to a couple more interesting questions. Why did they double the price? Did the cost of everything they do double? Well, newsprint went up, but they fired a lot of guys when the new management took over, so maybe that evens out. Is it twice as good as it used to be? And here's the most interesting part. It used to be 50 cents in metropolitan Los Angeles. But if you went to the outlying areas where there were competing suburban papers, it was a quarter. And people got wise to that, so they lowered the price to a quarter for everybody. Actually, that's not why they lowered the price. They lowered the price because the previous management thought they'd get a lot more readers by virtually giving the paper away. And they did for a while, and then they didn't, because the people had read the paper. So now they figure they might as well sock the people who are still reading the paper for the money that they were going to make by all the extra people who were going to read the paper but had read the paper and then decided they didn't want to read the paper anymore. Anyway, doubling the price of the dog trainer starting very, very soon. So if you live in a city that doesn't yet have a monopoly newspaper, when you do, you couldn't have a better neighbor. Hello, welcome to the show.
go to New Orleans, you ought to go see the Mardi Gras. When you see the Mardi Gras, somebody'll tell you what's carnival for. Get your ticket in your hand, you wanna go to New Orleans. Get your ticket in your hand, you wanna go to New Orleans. You know when you get to New Orleans, somebody'll show you the Zulu King. You will see the Zulu King down on St. Claude and Dumas. You know you see the Zulu King down on St. Claude and Dumas. And if you stay right there, I'm sure you'll see the Zulu Queen.
From the home of the homeless, from the edge of America, though with one mental leg on the on a balcony on St. Charles Avenue, this is Harry Scherr welcoming you to yet another edition of Le Show. And we haven't doubled our price as of yet. We're mulling it now. We're going to see how the LA Times, that starts March 1st, I believe. We're going to see how that works. If they get away with it, we might double our price. Because, you know, the cost of information. That's it. Cost of information. Cost of not buying the LA Times, for example. Hey, a shocking, speaking of news, a shocking tabloid report. And what other kind is there, really? Claims that O.J. Simpson, yes, starred in a three-in-a-bed porn flick that could earn him millions of dollars. O.J. denies the story. Simpson's lawyer says the Globe, the tabloid in question, tried to set his client up in the same manner that Frank Gifford was lured into a Manhattan hotel room. Simpson's girlfriend, Christine Prody, the one that they've had this serial 911 calls against each other for the last few years. The Nicole lookalike, you remember her, apparently is one of the people in the alleged X-rated romp, which was supposedly directed by a well-known porn king. Well, there's a king of everything in Mardi Gras, so why shouldn't there be a porn king as well? Among his credits are Prescription for Lust and The Nympho. My favorite detail, though, from this shocking tabloid story is that as O.J. entered the bedroom of an ultra-posh hotel in the Coconut Grove section of Miami, he began to sing "If I Only Had a Brain" from The Wizard of Oz. You can't make that up. How could even a tabloid make that up? Says a source close to the production, exclusively to a shocking tabloid, O.J. did it for the money. No! I thought in his previous movie work it was always done for the money. Simpson's lawyer, Yale Galanter, another Simpson lawyer, can I have the hands raised of anybody, any lawyer who's not represented either O.J. Simpson or Bill Clinton in the last? Yeah, I thought so. Simpson's lawyer, Yale Galanter, admits O.J. was filmed inside the room with the two women. So that much we know now. But he states there was no sex and everybody was completely 100% clothed. Remember the last time the words, the percentage 100% was applied to O.J.? That's right. Absolutely 100% not guilty. He likes 100%. Okay. O.J.'s lawyer also says if there were X-rated footage in existence, the owners of the Globe would have mortgaged the magazine to get it. But he was in the room with the two girls, and they were filming. and it was 100% clothes on. So I want to see that. I want to see O.J. and two girls with all their clothes on. Sure. Jim Nabors, ladies and gentlemen, on a totally different subject, on a hot property kind of deal, has listed his Beverly Hills condo at $535,000. He's decided to sell because he's lived primarily in Hawaii for 33 years, and he hardly ever uses his condo. The unit has been completely refurbished, but not used. It faces west in the rear of the high rise with city and ocean views, has three bedrooms and slightly more than 2,000 square feet. The unit has a... Hey, Jim Nabors released two CDs of inspirational tunes last year. Did you know that? It's in the real estate column. Weird Al, this is, I guess, another music-themed column. Weird Al Yankovic has listed his Hollywood Hills home at $589,000. Two bedrooms and 1,400 square feet. Al, you're doing better than that, aren't you? It has a spa, fireplace, and canyon and city views. He's owned the property since 1985. 1,400 square feet. It's barely room to polka. And Arnold Schwarzenegger bought his wife a neighbor's home to add to their Pacific Palisades compound. This marks the third time in 8 years that the Schwarzeneggers have bought a neighboring property. The compound now totals about 5.5 acres. So don't live next to the Schwarzeneggers. They'll buy you out as soon as look at you. Their neighbors were spending more time in Pittsburgh. Yeah, I'd say if it's living next door to the Schwarzeneggers or spending time in Pittsburgh, yeah, it's close. Say that. The five-bedroom house is on nearly 1.5 acres. Mm-hmm. Kylie Minogue. Anybody care about Kylie Minogue? Australian singer. She's selling her West Hollywood. I didn't even know she was living here. Selling her West Hollywood home for about its $1.3 million asking price. She purchased the home last year. She hasn't much time to use it. Oh, okay. So she wasn't living here. Because, you know, otherwise... I don't know. Maybe people are moving away because they don't want to pay that doubled price for the dog trainer. But on the other hand, ladies and gentlemen, may I please take a moment here to express some of the pride. You know, we have wounded pride here in Southern California because we're all damaged goods here. But every once in a while, something happens that reminds us that. Despite everything else, despite ourselves, we've grown up. I can remember a while back, let's put it that way. Let's be nice to me and say a while back when L.A. and Southern California in general was just regarded by sophisticates as Hicksville, not the city on Long Island, just the metaphorical Hicksville, just Rube Town. And they would point these sophisticates from time to time when they would be pressed for examples, like anybody needed an example of why L.A. was Hicksville, to the existence of the L.A. County Pornography Commission. What kind of a place has a pornography commission? So it came as good news in that regard this week when the Los Angeles County Pornography Commission, still in existence, although it's only had four meetings in, I guess, the last decade, announced that it was folding its tent, closing up shop. I don't know if that's because O.J. really did have his clothes on or whatever the reason, the Los Angeles County Pornography Commission disbanding, discommissioning. Now, it's a particularly piquant moment for the Los Angeles County Pornography Commission to be disbanding, for Los Angeles to be bereft of such protection, because at virtually the very same time, I think about a week earlier, the mayor of a city that used to be known as the world capital of sophistication, announced that what his city needed more than anything else now was a decency commission. That's right, Mayor Rudolph Giuliani outraged at another art piece at the Brooklyn Museum, this one featuring a depiction of a naked black woman, I believe it was the painter herself, self-portrait, at something that otherwise looked like the Last Supper. He was outraged. The adulterous mayor said it was an insult to Catholicism and announced that he was going to set up a decency commission in New York, staffing it with basically decent people. So I believe that requires a nationwide talent search. But in any case, New York setting up a decency commission, L.A. disbanding the pornography commission, you tell me department. But now to the I tell you department. This is basically for listeners on, I don't normally do this, but I'm doing this. Specifically for listeners in the Aspen, Colorado area on our fine affiliate up there, but also for anybody else who either is planning to fly into Aspen this week or just on a whim might do that, because there's this big comedy festival going on in Aspen starting, I think, Wednesday, and it will be your first, and I hope you're not your last, opportunity to see my new film that I wrote and directed, ouch, Teddy Bear's Picnic, Thursday and Friday at the Aspen Comedy Festival. Come on up. Come on over. And join us Wednesday night at the big hotel on Dean Street at 10:30. The fabulous Judith Owen will be singing a couple of songs from the movie and some other things. That's just if you're planning, you know, your Aspen trip, or if you're there, because there's so much going on. Here are a couple of I've mentioned before how the British papers always love to save up the scary stories for Sunday, like Sunday. In the eyes of the British press, is the day to scare the folks. And here are a couple of fine examples from The Observer. Now, this is a serious, this is not a shocking tabloid. This is not OJ in a porn film kind of newspaper. This is a respectable, serious newspaper. Here are two stories from it today. First of all, this sounds like the 5 o'clock news on your local TV station, how a clean home can be a killer. Can your home kill tonight at 5? Tens of thousands of Britons could suffer anything from chronic ill health to early death. Early death. Because of toxic chemicals used in consumer products in homes. Fewer than a quarter of the 70,000 chemicals used in toiletries and cleaning products have been subjected to a full safety investigation, while others, officially classed as hazardous waste, are frequently found in products from baby lotion to eye drops and cleaning fluids, according to Pat Thomas, author of Cleaning Yourself. Come on. You got to read this straight. Author of Cleaning Yourself to Death. And maybe may not be a joking matter. I'm not sure. She says, she says women who work at home have a 55% higher death rate from cancer than those who work outside the home. Some of the most toxic chemicals we come into contact with are not blown in through the window from a factory or passing car. They're bought in good faith in stores and supermarkets and brought back into our homes by us in the form of everyday cleaning products. Lack of legislation has meant that chemicals banned in other more tightly controlled areas are still commonly used in thousands of household products. She believes this contributes heavily to the U.S. EPA's recent finding that air quality in homes is more toxic than outdoor air, often containing between 2 and 5 times the concentration of toxic chemicals. Toiletries and cleaning products regularly include ingredients which contain carcinogens, hormone-disrupting chemicals, and central nervous system disruptors. Well, hey, that's my job description, central nervous system disruptor. This has remained hidden because people assume that if we're living longer, we must be healthier, says Thomas, but we're actually strikingly unhealthy. Chronic diseases are on the rise. Respiratory problems such as asthma and bronchitis have doubled in recent years. Thomas found high levels of sodium lauryl sulfate, a harsh detergent commonly used as an engine degreaser, in toothpastes, shampoos, and cleansers. One of the most dangerous chemicals Thomas found was nitrosamine, a carcinogen commonly used in baby and body lotions, facial moisturizers, and shampoos. 100 times the amount of nitrosamine in a single dose of shampoo as would be found in a typical portion of bacon, which there was a big nitrosamine in bacon alert in the 70s, says Thomas. I know, I was alerted by that. And then this story. Also, professionals refuse to believe it at first, but there's now undeniable evidence that the abuse of old people in nursing homes is on a level with the pedophile menace. Anyone who bothers to look into it cannot fail to realize that the sexual abuse of elderly people in care homes is horribly prevalent, says somebody who helps take the calls. Okay, so that's the alarm diet for today. But on the other hand, The British are Oh, by the way, Tony Blair met with, speaking of the British, met with George W. Bush this weekend. Camp David, I believe. And the Sunday papers, at least in Britain, are, and I think here too, are all full of fulsome praise, not only by Tony Blair, but by unnamed observers at number 10 Downing Street for George W. Bush, saying, well, he knows his foreign policy. So the charm offensive worked again, apparently. Though George W. Bush said he was charmed by Tony Blair, so they charmed each other. Tony Blair, of course, was like Britain's clone of Bill Clinton, even used his same pollster and the same triangulation technique to make New Labour a clone of our New Democrats here. Anyway, Tony Blair switched, likes George W., but it's not only him. Where is this story? Yeah, how about this? President Bush and President Clinton hit it off during one-on-one meetings in Washington. They just clicked, according to Time magazine. During one December meeting, I think they were together for 2 hours, Clinton developed nearly as much affinity for Bush in the 2 hours as he had developed for Al Gore in 8 years. Clinton later told friends, Bush really connects. It's a mistake to underestimate him. Clinton also, we're now deep into new Harry Thomason territory. Clinton's TV producer friend, who apparently was involved in getting one of the pardon requests funneled to the campaign treasurer for Hillary Rodham Clinton's Senate campaign, went through Harry Thomason. But Clinton uses Harry Thomason for everything, apparently. When he was concerned about how Bush would react to the timing of the plea bargain that wrapped up the Lewinsky saga, which happened the day before the inauguration, Clinton turned to TV producer-director Harry Thomason to back-channel an apology to Bush. And who was the conduit to Bush? Movie producer and Bush friend Jerry Weintraub. So they all use producers. It's all Hollywood. It's all show business. What do you want? Anyway, the good news about the Brits, they're taking the lead against the threat of asteroid impacts. Yes, we will be, while the U.S. wants missile defense, Britain will be leading in asteroid defense. The U.K. will be committed to a monitoring program to spot asteroids on a potential collision course with the Earth. When they find one, they will immediately call Art Bell. And no, that's not what they're going to do. A task force last year urged action after drawing attention to half-mile-wide chunks of rock smashing into the Earth, causing hundreds of millions of deaths. The threat of that hasn't happened yet. Such impacts are thought to occur, on average, every 100,000 years. The Near-Earth Object Task Force called for the building of a telescope dedicated to finding asteroids on course with the Earth, and the British government has accepted the need for a 3-meter telescope capable of detecting even small rocks. The government seeks to give Britain a key role in tackling the global threat. British government will draw up plans for minimizing casualties in the event of an asteroid impact. It's not a large object. There's always a possibility of moving people from the area that it's going to hit on the Earth, and we do potentially have the opportunity to deflect it. Asteroid deflection, ladies and gentlemen. Asteroid deflection. How about that? It doesn't say how. This is a very exciting time for British science in general and British astronomy in particular, says Limbit Opik, the member of parliament who launched the campaign to have the asteroid danger taken seriously. Oh, I'm sorry. It lets me out. Yeah, just my luck, it'll hit New Orleans. Anyway, the Brits, ladies and gentlemen, will be deflecting asteroids. So if you see any asteroids coming your way, call a Brit.
The next town. Road man driving in the road van. I set up the sound system for the band. Road man, slow it down and you will get that safe and sound. He says, no, 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 the show must go on. Road man,
speed records in the van. Roadman, heat on my policeman. Leaving trail of ripped up citations. Roadman, slow it down, and you will get there safe and sound. He says, no, 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 the show must go on. A roadman, heavy load, he's got to stop and smell the rose. Roadman, he says, no go, I got to be king of the road.
This is Le Show. It must go on. Some 200, here's good news, ladies and gentlemen. If you think you're suffering from information overload, the American newspaper industry is trying to help by giving you less information. Some new 200 American newspapers have in recent years cut page width by about an inch. Newspapers from the Washington Post to the Los Angeles Times to USA Today have made the size conversion, saving 8% or so on newsprint costs. The Boston Globe figures to recoup $4 million this year from the shrinkage. Each newspaper notes that its readers welcome the smaller, more convenient page, the more modern look. But what many papers don't say is that the overall, you should pardon the expression, news hole, the amount of information available to readers, shrinks along with the page. Some reduce the print size to compensate. Some raise the page count. All in all, chances are, though, that you get less news. That's all it says here. So I was just looking to see if there were any other telltale quotes that you might enjoy, ladies and gentlemen, hence the pause. It was not a seizure of any kind. All right, so let's go into this this thing that still is with us, this Bill Clinton thing. He's up there in Chappaqua. The pardons are hitting the proverbial fan. This week, it became known that Hugh Rodham, Hillary Clinton's brother, took charged $400,000 for representing two applicants for pardons, both successful. I think one got a commutation, one got a pardon. When it became public knowledge, I think the story was broken by a shocking tabloid. Hillary Clinton demanded that brother Hugh give the money back, and reportedly he has, although there have been some problems with getting the funds returned. You know, returning $400,000 doesn't happen in a day, ladies and gentlemen. It's not like, you know, doubling the price of your newspaper. It doesn't happen overnight. And it also became known this week that Roger Clinton, Bill's brother, attempted to get pardons for some of his friends. Roger said he went through all the went through all the proper channels, and none of those pardons were granted. And Roger said he was so ticked off that he didn't speak to his brother Bill for a couple of weeks. Today's New York Times reports that one reason there was this last minute flurry of pardons was that news leaked from the White House in December that the president was considering giving a pardon to Michael Milken, the non-fugitive financier. And when that leak came out, the White House was deluged by people saying, me too. So the requests came in the last minute, not just the decisions. Other pardon news. In the empathy department, in the oh boy does he have empathy department, Reverend Jesse Jackson made a successful appeal. Appealed for a sentence commutation for Mel Reynolds, former Chicago Democratic congressman, serving a 7-year prison sentence for corruption and having sex with an underage campaign worker. There are also questions being raised about the sentence commutations given to 4 Hasidic Jews from a village in suburban New York. Surrounding Hasidic Jewish villages voted overwhelmingly for Rick Lazio for United States Senator from New York. This particular village voted overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton for Senator from New York. And shortly thereafter, this commutation was granted, although nobody has any proof about anything or any of it. Clinton's problems are troubling some image-conscious corporations. A month ago, Morgan Stanley, Dean Witter officials fell all over themselves to ensure Clinton's attendance at its Boca Raton, Florida retreat, repeatedly calling to ask whether he might arrive early to play golf with favored clients. He agreed, played 9 holes, answering questions for 2 hours and posed for photos. When some clients complained, the company's chairman sent an apologetic email. Quote, "We should have been far more sensitive to the strong feelings of our clients over Mr. Clinton's personal behavior as president." After which, some Democratic clients publicly announced they'd canceled their Morgan Stanley accounts. He still has, apparently, some goodly number of speech commitments to give, does Mr. Clinton. But let me put it this way. I ran into the 2 executive producers of a certain television show whose theme music you may recognize on this broadcast, who said this week, "Gee, too bad you can't do Clinton something anymore." I said, "What do you mean?"
The Chappaqua years.
You grinding beans? You making coffee? That espresso you're drinking? You gonna not talk to me for the next 6 years, huh?
It's a good plan A.
Well, listen here, Toots. You can play the victim all you want for public consumption, but inside this house, let's do some straight shooting. If it wasn't for your brother Hugh and your friends, the Hasidic Jews, this whole pardon thing would have blown over faster than the XFL.
What's the XFL?
It's this league with...
I can't believe you're saying that. I can't believe you're sitting there thinking you're the victim now. This is the best. My Senate career, something I waited a long time to start.
And you deserve it, and I supported you in getting
it. It's being strangled in its crib by your decision to pull an all-nighter pardon party.
Well,
you saw what happened this week? I had to hold a news conference to answer pardon questions.
Well, I did see that, and I thought you did damn well. You blame me, and that was... utterly appropriate. So,
darling, I got through an entire campaign without having to have a news conference.
I know.
Did it ever occur to you that maybe that's a tradition that I'd like to continue?
You called me darling.
Don't get your hopes up. In the Senate cafeteria on Tuesday, I called Jesse Helms darling.
Okay. I think I've been very good about not finger-pointing on this one.
Well, if you're going to start pointing, can I advise you not to use your wagging finger?
Listen here. I took the heat for pardoning those Puerto Ricans last year because your folks said it would help you with your Hispanic numbers, which it did, okay? Now, you bet this recent pardon thing wasn't as well organized as a rainy day at Woodstock, but you know better than anyone why that was. You'd cherry-picked half of the decent remaining staff people for your operation. I'm sitting there left with a couple of attorneys and good old John Podesta, and if I might say so... if you hadn't been so busy trying to furnish this house with stuff from the white one, you might have found the time to tell me that your dear brother Huey was pulling in a half a mil for a pardon and a commutation. Yeah, I just hope he used that money to buy himself a a couple of crates of Slim Fast.
He returned the money, as I told him to. Everyone in the civilized world knows that. You can lay off Huey and maybe pay some attention to the pathetic cry for help coming from your own brother.
Roger? Man, he tried to get me to pardon a dozen of his AA pals, but he wasn't getting any money for it.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried to get money from Roger's AA pals?
Listen, Hill. Roger was so steamed he wouldn't talk to me for 2 weeks.
So?
So I wish I could refuse to pardon his pals all the time. That'd be one problem solved. But, you know, I don't need this.
Oh, like I need it. Like it's not keeping me from being Senator of the Week in Roll Call Magazine. Look, Bill, it might just be time for you to wake up and smell your own cologne.
No.
None of your people can hang with you anymore.
Yeah.
Barney Frank, Maxine Waters, even Carville. Everybody's going public against you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you should take that as an indication that for once in your life, maybe the problem is you.
You know, that is so glib. I mean, I have no power now. There's no reason for anybody to defend me. So, of course, folks are going to pile on.
I'm going to go sit in an emptier room and go back to Plan A.
I suppose I have to get that myself now. I bet Jimmy Carter doesn't have to get his own calls. Hello.
Yeah, Mr. President, how you doing?
Carville, man, what the freaking hell were you thinking?
What?
I just... You know. Yeah, you were just unloading on me like a...
Like a backed up nutria?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, Jesus, James, I can understand Barney Frank. He has to get reelected in 18 months, but you, man, what's your excuse? He's trying to get some conservative nookie from Mary.
No. Now, don't go there, Mr. President.
I mean, poor old John freaking Podesta is out there on the Sunday shows more alone than Paul McCartney after Wings broke up. I mean, seriously, man.
Yeah.
You would never have done an Alka-Seltzer commercial if it hadn't been for me.
Yeah, well, Mr. President, mm-hmm. In my mind, you're going to be Mr. President until the Mississippi River changes course.
Uh-huh.
You know, Mary's in the White House now. The old he's left, she's right. That's dead. I got very solid focus group numbers telling me I can't be that predictable anymore. People think that stuff is more tired than Madonna's next video. So, yeah, I had to stake out a different James. But, you know, man, you can take the heat.
Oh, you want to make up the speaking gigs at 100K a pop that I've lost because folks like you have to buttress their unpredictability numbers? Let me just tell you one thing, James. I hope you never have to go to work in Harlem every day. I mean, the folks are great, but those elevators, they're like Little Rock in the 70s.
Mr. President, you remember Toni Morrison calling you?
Yeah. The first black president. You know what? It gets me free cheeseburgers at the McDonald's on 125th.
Yeah, well, you know what the black folks know, that because of your enemies, you got to be twice as good just to get by. Straight from the gizzard, you know, on this whole pardon thing, you would... You were barely normal. That's not good enough. You know, for the good of the country, you should have crossed every I and dotted every T.
Uh-huh. You called for a reason?
Yeah, I wanted to make sure there were no hard feelings is all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
James.
Uh-huh.
What were we all about?
Winning.
Putting people first.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm people too, right?
Of course.
So, you know, maybe you should have put me first.
Good boy.
It hurts me to say this to you, Carville.
Well, then, you don't have to.
But maybe you should stop thinking about tomorrow.
Youthful angst. And middle-aged powerlessness. Together they add up to Clinton something, moving to Lifetime this fall.
Mama. fronteira, nas casas Bahia. Mama África, a minha mãe é mãe solteira e tem que fazer mamadeira todo dia, além de trabalhar como empacotadeira nas casas Bahia. Mama África tem tanto que fazer, além de cuidar neném, além de fazer tanguinho, filhinho tem que entender. Mama África vai e vem, mas não se afasta de você. De casa, seus filhos, seu lodunzão, rola o maior jazz. Mama tem calo nos pés, mama precisa de paz, mama não quer brincar mais.
Filhinho dá um tempo, é tanto bom pra ver o ritmo de vida de
Ladies and gentlemen, in the Be Careful What You Write, it may come around and bite you in the behind. Literally, Lennon. Remember Lennon? He wrote in 1921 that making gold toilets for the public would be a useful reminder of the waste of lives in wars between capitalist nations that killed millions. Now, Lam Sai Wing, a Hong Kong jeweler, has fulfilled that prophecy by making a $5 million toilet out of 24-karat gold. He got the idea as a schoolboy on the Chinese mainland when he learned that Lennon had wanted to make the gold toilets. Lennon might be disappointed to find out that the toilet is only for the use of customers who spend more than $1,500 on jewelry at Mr. Lam's jewelry store. Now, ladies and gentlemen, back to the pardon story. That was just a little refreshing break. Yeah, every once in a while you need those. So we've learned a lot. By the way, yes, James Carville did weigh in against at least the Mark Rich pardon. It's been very difficult to find Democrats who would speak up in defense of Bill Clinton in this whole situation. Matter of fact, Meet the Press this morning had to go deep, deep into the bench of the Black Caucus. I follow this stuff. They found a congressman I'd never heard of who was great, very effective advocate. But nonetheless, who was he? But deep in the bench, you know, at least they got a bench. Anyway, we have learned, ladies and gentlemen, in the attack of the pardon jackals. And of course, yes, we know, or you should know by now, George Bush, the dad, pardoned Casper Weinberger just before Casper Weinberger was set to go to trial and might have implicated George Bush, the dad, in the Iran-Contra mess. It's a little self-serving, don't you think? Armand Hammer, the industrialist, was pardoned by George Bush, the dad, without ever having gone to trial. So, you know, there are precedents everywhere. Anyway, we've learned a lot about the recipients of some of the Clinton pardons. Carlos Vignale and his dad, the Los Angeles property owner who was able to get the Archbishop of Los Angeles to write a letter advocating the pardon for his boy who had been jailed for a big cocaine deal. Learned a lot about Mark and Denise Rich and Denise's friend, the fundraiser Beth Dozoritz. We're learning about all these people. But I'll tell you who we're not being refreshed on the background of is the head of the House committee that's going to be holding another set of hearings on the pardons this Thursday. A longtime Clinton critic, Congressman Dan Burton. We're not being reminded of why he's known around Washington as Watermelon Dan.
I gotta listen to this. I'm sorry.
So there's this congressman named Dan Burton. He's from Indiana, though his head's more in Texarkana, that's for certain. He's got a Paula, that's a Jones, for hurting Clinton. Keeps squinting and hitting darkly at conspiracies bigger than the Pyrenees. Travelgate and Filegate, Troopergate, he had him by the Milegate. First made the evening news when he had clues, really hunches that come in bunches, that Vince Foster had killed himself, was killed by somebody else. The side was Hom, not Sue. Dan knew just what to do. To prove the theory wasn't hard, hell, he had plenty of space right in his own backyard.
Sorry.
He does subpoenas, he does the yelling, shoots a pistol at a melon, just because he can. What the melon done?
Who, me? Who, me?
See, watermelon's most like a head. Cantaloupe can't cope, that's what Dan said. You need more fluid than a honeydew. So he does what a patriot ought to do. Gets out his gun, goes out in the midday sun, puts a watermelon on the grass, and then shoots off its ass, trying to recreate the crime. Fitz Foster went down in his prime, because he couldn't take the punishment. Washington was just infernal. He was being pilloried on the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal. Or was it being Hillary? That was the kernel of Dan's case. Nuts always come with a kernel. And this one was clear as crystal. Thank God he had the shooting space. And the pistol.
Yes, I hear you.
Hey, watermelon done. Watermelon. Watermelon. Hey, watermelon done. Watermelon. Watermelon. Despite the noise that he can make in, for reports say he's mistaken. He took it like a man. Watermelon done.
Which one's Batman? Which one's Robin?
Practice makes preachment. After not even getting in the tube since impeachment, Watermelon Dan is back. Leading the pack, not even treated as whack. Planning more hearings than Liz Taylor has earrings. Demanding lists of library donors and records of phoners. Hitting at bribes and influence peddling. Ooh, stop the press. I guess they don't sell access in Congress. Bill Clinton, always a lover of danger, just makes the world stranger. Sowing Watermelon Dan's gardens with pardons. Hardens all his friends and setting free Mark Rich, maybe thanks to his ex-bitch, as well as other dubious felons. And Dan just walks out back, sets himself up a new row of melons.
Batman. Which one's Robin?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to put the lid on this edition of Le Show. Go out and catch some beads, won't you? If you can. The program will return next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, over the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network, on shortwave at WBCQ The Planet at 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer, if they remember to fix the website thing, at www.kcrw.com. Yeah, more. And it would be just like gold toilets for the people, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. Oh, I'll be a self-promoting pest. One last reminder, Aspen, Colorado, this Thursday and Friday, the Rocky Mountain preview of Teddy Bear's Picnic, my new film, at the United States Comedy Arts Festival. If you're there, come. If you're not there, pray. Want to email this broadcast? Send your stuff to lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. And as usual, no attachments, please. Now, I'm not telling you how to live. That's just email stuff. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Happy Mardi Gras!